I love you. I wish there was some words I could think of to fully express the depth of my affection for you. By the way, I don't have it all together, so if I'm supposed to act like I do, I apologize. I hope you know that other than my family, you are my favorite people in the world, the people of hope. I pray for you every day. And the last 2 days, I've prayed for you with a broken heart. When his wife passed away, C.S. Lewis wrote to a friend, and he said, "The pain of losing my wife isn't localized to one area of my life. It's affecting every part of my life." And that's what we're experiencing right now. Jennifer's tragic death on Saturday night makes everything feel different. And we're somehow supposed to go back to classes and go back into our routine and act like everything's normal, but it's not normal. We're on a new road now, a harder road. And there's a lot that comes with that. I have so many questions, so many questions. I don't understand the accident. I mean, it's been explained to me, but it doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand why it happened. I don't understand why God would allow it. It's nothing about it. It seems right or fair or good. And that, of course, is true anytime anyone passes away. But if we're honest with ourselves, there are some deaths that offend our sense of justice more than others. And Jennifer's death is one of those. Because if there was anyone who I expected God to protect from something like this, it was Jennifer. She was already vulnerable. What I know for sure is that Jennifer was blind, born blind. And on Saturday night, her eyes were opened. And the very first thing she saw was the face of Jesus. And I'm kind of jealous that she got to see Jesus before me. I've been doing this chapel series this year about following Jesus. And I love this subject. Because Jesus is the coolest guy I know. I want more than anything to live a life that pleases him. He has known me and loved me since before time began. He's my king and my savior. He's behind every good thing that's ever happened to me. And he's given me countless second chances every time I mess up. He's my favorite person to read about, my favorite person to talk to, and when I go too long without talking to him, and it's always my fault, I miss him. I know one thing for sure. I know one thing with more conviction than anything else, and that is that Jesus is good and he's trustworthy. And the more I follow him, the more I love him. And the more I follow him, the more I'm confused by him. The more I get to know him, the more I realize I don't really understand him. And what I'm seeing more and more lately is that that's been the case since the beginning. I want to read a story to you from Luke 2. It's a story of junior high Jesus. So the Gospels, for the most part, skip from baby Jesus at the nativity scene to 30-year-old Jesus beginning his ministry. We have one story, only one story of those many in-between years. And it's a story about when his parents think they've lost him. Let me read you this story from Luke 2. It starts at verse 41. Every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went to the festival according to the custom. After the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. They began looking for him among their relatives and friends, and when they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us this way? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. This is the word of God. So Mary and Joseph went to Jerusalem, the big city, every year for Passover. And on this particular year, Jesus is 12 years old. They left Jerusalem to go back home, and he didn't. They would have been traveling with a big caravan, lots of friends and relatives, and so it's not totally bizarre that they didn't realize he wasn't in their company right away. They start traveling on, realize he's not with them. When they realize he's not with them, they freak out, go back to the city, scour the city, spend 3 days looking for him, and they finally find him in the temple courts. And he doesn't seem at all bothered by what he has just put his parents through. First thing he says, he's 12 years old, these are the first recorded words of Jesus. First thing we know he says, it's a question. I think it's probably significant that the first recorded words of Jesus are a question. If you read the Gospels, you see that Jesus asks a lot more questions than he answers. And the question Jesus asks his parents is, "Why were you searching for me?" Wait, what? Why were we searching for you? We were searching for you because you're a 12-year-old kid alone in the big city. Of course we would be searching for you. His question makes no sense. It's confusing. And I don't think there's any other way to read it than to see it as confusing. He's a kid. He's 12 years old, but it's not like he's a toddler. Like, he's old enough to know that he has just put his parents through something pretty traumatic. We don't know where he was eating during this time. We don't know where he was sleeping. He knows he's been separated from his parents, and he doesn't seem to show any empathy toward what they've been through. "Why were you searching for me?" It's a confusing question, and I used to read this story and be really bothered by the way that Jesus treats his parents in this story. And it's occurred to me relatively recently that I think that's the point. I think we're supposed to be bothered by the way Jesus treats his parents. Jesus is confusing. He's confounding. He does things that he doesn't explain and that we don't understand. And by the way, this is totally deliberate on his part. Like, it's not an accident that he stayed behind. His parents left and he stayed behind. He knew what he was doing. And when Mary realizes all this, when she realizes that they've gone through this traumatic situation and he doesn't seem bothered by it, she gets angry. She rebukes him. She goes to Jesus and she says, "Why have you treated us this way?" And at some point in your walk with Jesus, you're going to find yourself in a situation like Mary is in this story, where you go to Jesus and you say, "Why have you treated me this way? I love you. I've given my life to serve you. Why are you treating us this way?" And that Hope College is where we are right now. Going to Jesus saying, "Why have you treated us this way?" Jennifer lived a life defying odds. When she was in second grade, she won second place in a national Braille competition. Her dad told me yesterday that when she was 12, I didn't know this, when she was 12, apparently she became the youngest person in the United States to have a service dog, to have a seeing eye dog. Usually it's the case, I didn't know this, usually it's the case that you have to be 16 to be eligible for a service dog. Jennifer, of course, was determined to be the first. So they found some organization in Canada, made a trip, went through all kinds of assessments, had to prove to them that Jennifer was mature and independent enough to handle a dog. And she got a dog named Rowdy at the age of 12, 4 years before the eligible age. Her dad told me this story yesterday, and at the end of the story, he said, it's a miracle that we got Rowdy. Why, God? Why would you give a miracle just to take it away? That's the question we're asking, and I think even though we know it's not the case intellectually or theologically, we tend to buy into this notion that followers of Jesus ought to be insulated from hard times, from confusing times. And that is just not, it's just not the Jesus of the Bible. The Jesus of the Bible deliberately confuses his parents. The Jesus of the Bible falls asleep in a boat in the middle of a storm. The Jesus of the Bible, when his followers are hungry and thirsty, he says, "Eat my body and drink my blood." The Jesus of the Bible, when his followers wanted him to lead a revolution to save Israel, he intentionally surrenders to the Roman occupation and lets himself die. Jesus is totally confusing. And the question is, what do we do with that? Mary does two things in this story that I think can give us a guide. The first thing she does is she goes straight to Jesus with her emotion and her anger and her confusion and her questions. Why have you treated us this way? You can go to him. Go to him with your raw emotion. He's a big God. He can handle it. He wants to engage your hearts, not some fake version of you. So whatever you're feeling, go straight to him with it. And the other thing we can do, and you see this in the story, Mary, she's confused. Luke says it at the end of the story. They're confused. They didn't understand. And yet she holds on to what she knows is true, which is that Jesus is good and he's trustworthy. And if you keep reading, Luke ends this chapter by saying Mary treasured all of this in her heart. And the question is, how in the world was she able to do that? I think the answer to that is found in the second question Jesus asks. So the only time Jesus talks in this story, he asks two questions. First, he says, why were you searching for me? And then this, then he says, didn't you know that I had to be in my Father's house? He had to be there. It means it's an obligation. It's something that was predetermined. It's part of some plan, and we don't understand it, and Jesus doesn't even make an attempt to try to explain it, but it's part of some plan, and it's a good plan. And what we have access to that Mary and Joseph didn't is we got the whole book, and we can read to the end, and we know how it ends. And in the end, Jesus makes all things new. He makes all things new. But it sure is a confusing journey along the way. It sure is a journey along the way that doesn't play out the way we think it ought to. But we can hold on to the fact that Jesus is good. The whole story of the Bible, the whole story of Jesus' life is bad news before it's good news. He's born into scandal. He's unjustly killed. He's buried in disgrace. And then Mary goes later in life, another 3 days, thinking she's lost her son. And he comes back. He comes back, and when he does, he turns to the cross. The cross, which was once this international symbol of torture and capital punishment. And Jesus turns that into our ultimate symbol of hope. Because that's what God does. He takes bad things and transforms them into something good. And that's how the story ends, and we can hold on to that, even though it's confusing along the way. He's leading us to a good place. We can hold on to it. I mentioned C.S. Lewis at the beginning, and I want to end with a quote. If you know me, you know I love the Narnia books. Of course, C.S. Lewis wrote the Narnia books. We named our middle daughter Lucy after Lucy from the Narnia books. And if you've read the Narnia books, you know that the last book, which is called The Last Battle, ends with the main characters dying. The children die in the end. Do you remember how they die? A train accident. Die in a train accident. And this is what C.S. Lewis says. This is what he says after the train accident. This is how he ends the whole book. The whole Narnia series ends with this. He says, the things that begin to happen after that were so great and beautiful that I cannot write them. And for us, this is the end of the stories. We can most truly say that they all lived happily ever after. But for them, it was only the beginning of the real story. All of their life in this world and all of their adventures in Narnia had only been the cover and the title page. Now, at last, they were beginning chapter one of the great story on which no one on earth has read. It's a story that goes on forever, and every chapter is better than the one before. And that's the great story that Jennifer is living out right now. All of her adventures on earth were just the title and the cover page. And now she's part of that great story that goes on forever and ever. Jesus is confusing, but he's good and he's trustworthy. And let's hold on to it together, and let's hold on to each other together. Thank you, and go in peace.